This is the weekly podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. Welcome to the June 20, 2014 podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. My name is Natalie Pincham, and I'll be reading synopses of some of the articles published today. The topics covered in this week's podcast are neurosurgical history, neurosurgical education, vascular disorders, and oncology. Major Harvey Cushing's difficulties with the British and American armies during World War I. A historical vignette by Michael Emmett Carey. Harvey Cushing is the preeminent founder of American neurosurgery. Two biographies have portrayed his career. His wartime service in France from 1917 to 1918 provides further insight into Cushing's character. His book, From a Surgeon's Journal, covering this period, reveals that he was initially assigned to British hospitals. There he did his noteworthy work on the treatment of brain wounds. Despite this laudable effort, his work with the British was abruptly terminated. Cushing returned to American army control. Once there, he feared court-martial. The United States National Archive records reveal that Cushing was cashiered by the British for repeated censorship violations, plus making derogatory remarks about his British hosts. When asked to explain his poor judgment in writing by American authorities, Cushing was not forthcoming. Apparently, no court-martial was contemplated, but authorities recommended that Cushing be sent home, which would have been a disgrace. American surgical colleagues in France rose to his defense. Cushing's army career and possibly future academic career was ultimately saved by Colonel Merritt Ireland, chief medical officer in France, who retained Cushing, but with a stern warning against further infractions. Cushing thereafter performed credibly with the American Army, though not primarily as an active surgeon. He never acknowledged those who saved his career. The use of simulation in neurosurgical education and training. A systematic review article by Matthew Anthony Kirkman and co-authors. Simulation is gaining increasing interest in the context of surgical education and training, driven in part by resident duty hour restrictions and an increased focus on patient safety. This paper reports the first systematic review performed to evaluate the application of simulation within neurosurgical education and training, aiming to explore the state-of-the-art in simulation within neurosurgery. A comprehensive search strategy focused on simulation studies reporting outcome data identified 28 articles describing a range of simulators available at the neurosurgeon's disposal. Participant feedback about the simulators was generally found to be positive. However, evidence for validity and reliability was often lacking, and study quality was found to be poor overall. This review suggests that future neurosurgical simulation studies should seek to improve study design and reporting, and provide long-term follow-up data on simulated and, ideally, patient outcomes. Role of oxidized LDL and lectin-like oxidized LDL receptor 1 in cerebral vasospasm after subarachnoid hemorrhage. A laboratory investigation by Naoya Matsuda and co-workers. Cerebral vasospasm is a serious complication after subarachnoid hemorrhage, or SAH. Free radicals are recognized to play an important role. Oxidized LDL and its receptor, LOX1, may increase in cerebral arteries after SAH due to the free radicals from subarachnoid clots and generate intracellular reactive oxygen species. If so, apple polyphenol might be effective in the prevention of vasospasm due to an abundant content of procyanidins, which exhibit radical scavenging effects and the ability to suppress oxidized LDL and LOX1. This study investigates changes in levels of oxidized LDL and LOX1 after SAH, and whether administering apple polyphenol can modify cerebral vasospasm in a rabbit SAH model. The expression of oxidized LDL and LOX1 in the basilar arterial wall was significantly increased in the SAH group. The cross-sectional area of the basilar artery was greater in the animals that received apple polyphenol than in the untreated animals, and there was less oxidized LDL and LOX1 in specimens from the treated animals. This is the first study suggesting that levels of oxidized LDL and LOX1 increase due to SAH, and that these molecules may play a role in the pathogenesis of vasospasm. The authors hypothesize that procyanidins may inhibit a vicious cycle of oxidized LDL, LOX1, and reactive oxygen species, and conclude that apple polyphenol is a candidate for preventative treatment of cerebral vasospasm. Superior performance of cone beam CT angiography in characterization of intracranial atherosclerosis, a clinical article by Mina Gamal Safain and colleagues. Current evaluation of intracranial atherosclerotic disease has focused on the absolute degree of stenosis of a vessel without regard for high-risk plaque morphologies that portend higher risk of stroke. In this paper, the authors describe the first use of ultra-high-resolution C-arm cone beam CT angiography, or CBCTA, in the evaluation of vessel stenosis as well as plaque morphology. They compare the findings achieved with this modality to those achieved with other modalities. Over 3 years, CBCTA was utilized in all patients evaluated for intracranial atherosclerotic disease with catheter-based angiography at the author's institution. Lesions were evaluated for maximum degree of stenosis as well as plaque morphological characteristics via digital subtraction angiography, 3D rotational angiography, and CBCTA. These different imaging modalities were then compared in their assessment of absolute stenosis as well as their ability to resolve different plaque morphologies. Lesions were found to have similar degrees of stenosis when evaluated with CBCTA, compared to evaluation with 3D rotational angiography. But both 3D rotational angiography and CBCTA differed from digital subtraction angiography in their assessment of absolute degree of stenosis. Importantly, CBCTA provided the most detailed resolution of plaque morphology, identifying a new plaque characteristic in 61% of patients when compared to digital subtraction angiography, and 50% of patients when compared to 3D rotational angiography. No lesions discovered on digital subtraction angiography or 3D rotational angiography were missed by CBCTA. The authors conclude that CBCTA provides detailed spatial resolution of plaque morphology and may add to digital subtraction angiography and 3D rotational angiography in the evaluation of intracranial atherosclerotic disease. Further prospective study is warranted to determine any benefit CBCTA may provide in clinical decision-making and risk stratification over existing conventional imaging modalities. Prediction of methylguanine methyltransferase promoter methylation in glioblastoma using dynamic contrast-enhanced magnetic resonance and diffusion tensor imaging. A clinical article by Sung Soo An and co-authors. The methylation status of methylguanine methyltransferase, or MGMT, promoter has been associated with treatment response and prognosis in glioblastoma. In this retrospective study that included 43 patients with glioblastoma, the authors investigated the association between MGMT promoter methylation status and MRI findings, such as conventional imaging features, dynamic contrast-enhanced MRI, and diffusion tensor imaging. Among these MRI findings, transfer constant values were significantly higher in the MGMT methylated group, whereas MGMT methylation was not significantly associated with any other imaging features. This study shows that transfer constant may serve as a potential imaging biomarker to predict MGMT methylation status preoperatively in glioblastoma. However, further investigation with a larger cohort is necessary. Case-controlled studies in neurosurgery, a review article by Cody Nesvik and co-workers. Observational studies, such as case control and cohort studies, are valuable, cost-effective instruments in evidence-based medicine. Case-controlled studies are retrospective studies that assess the importance of possible risk factors in developing a disease. As case-control studies are increasing in popularity, the authors evaluated all self-described case-control studies in the neurosurgical literature for quality of methodology and reporting. Surprisingly, only 48% of self-reported case-control studies met the definition of a true case-control study. Use of odds ratios and logistic regression analysis, which are two statistical instruments that are commonly used in case-control studies, were strong positive predictors of true case-control studies. Conversely, negative predictors included focus on a procedure or intervention and use of the word outcome in the results. Common deficiencies in the reporting of true case-control studies included the reporting of bias, missing data, and funding information. Unexpectedly, true case-control studies are not becoming more prevalent with time and were no more likely than their counterparts to utilize potential study design experts such as epidemiologists. These findings indicate that most case-control studies in neurosurgery are in fact labeled incorrectly, and they highlight important areas of improvement for future observational studies in neurosurgery. Thank you for listening. Follow the JNS on Twitter at #TheJNS, and please like us on Facebook at Journal of Neurosurgery Publishing Group. Comments on this podcast can be sent to jnspodcast@thejns.org.